Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. I'd like to welcome all of you back to Ohio Exopolitics. I'm your host, Mark Snyder. We're going to be talking about the Meyer information this evening. I kind of expected one of my music files to start playing automatically, so I'll go ahead and play that now, and we'll start the show in about a minute or so. Again, we are back in the Billy Meyer case. I've been doing a lot of interesting study, there's just so many different things we could talk about. One of the things that I've been looking over in the Might of the Thoughts book is how we get to bad circumstances in our lives. And lower thoughts form lower feelings. Lower feelings form lower habits, and lower habits form lower circumstances. And these lower circumstances can be alcoholism, grief, bitterness, sorrow, all kinds of suffering. One of the things the Meyer information teaches us to do is to analyze our thinking, to look at our own thoughts and to evaluate them and determine, are we thinking negatively or are we neutral, positive, balanced? And there's a kind of a natural evolution of thoughts that takes place. If you have lower thoughts, that will lead to lower feelings. When you start to have lower feelings, then your habits become lower, and then your lower habits lead to lower circumstances in your life. For example, the person that has a lower thought, let's just say taking a drink of wine. There's nothing wrong taking a drink of wine, but you might take a drink of wine, which you get a good feeling from, or a certain feeling, and then, maybe you start to drink a little too often, that becomes a habit, and before you realize it, you start to trend towards alcoholism, impaired judgment. Now, that's a kind of an extreme case, but that's how the lower thoughts form lower feelings, form lower habits, and lower circumstances. And when these thoughts crystallize, they can be confusing and exhausting. So if you're spiraling out of control with lower thoughts and lower feelings, one way to tell is you'll start to become exhausted and confused. And what's even stranger about all of this is that in a relatively short time, everything kind of becomes automatic with our thought processes. And these things can run unconsciously. And that's why an alcoholic sometimes is an alcoholic before he realizes it. Now, I've also been studying part of a book. It's called A God Delusion and Sanity. And Marianne Neulinger from Switzerland, who works right alongside Billy, has been answering some of my questions in regard to this book. Now, I don't actually have the book, but I have one of her PDFs where she takes little sections out of the book that Billy, has written and talked about before. And I want to read you something. Before I do that, let's ask the question, what is God and what is the creation universal consciousness? And this comes from Billy's book, God, Delusion, and Sanity. It says, fundamentally, God is an invention of the human being, respectively of the human brain, whereby in the human being over millions of years, the imaginary divinity has been inherited in a form of schizophrenic epileptic delusion and has established itself in the temporal lobes as well as in the parietal lobes. Religious experiences which arise therefore constitute forms of schizophrenic delusion and are the result of genetically inherited religious beliefs. Now think about that. The parent can pass on their own religious beliefs or the tendency towards those religious beliefs. I talked about schizophrenia there. Now, we often think of schizophrenia as multiple personality disorder, but it's really not. Schizophrenia is a mental disorder characterized by failure to recognize what is real. And common symptoms include false beliefs, unclear, confused thinking. Now, how is this affecting our societies? We have religions, very extreme forms of religions. For example, the one associated with ISIS that form delusions in people's minds. Now, a delusion is defined as a belief or impression that is firmly maintained despite being contradicted by what is generally accepted as reality or a rational argument. And a delusion is a belief held with strong conviction despite the fact that there's superior evidence in the contrary. Now, Semyase, and if you're a listener, a studier of the Meyer material, you remember Semyase. Semyase was a Pleiaran woman, an extraterrestrial woman that first started meeting with Billy in 1975. And her 10th meeting with him dealt with the spiritual teachings, most of all. And she said something when she talked about the human body and about our spirit. She said, "He," meaning the earth human, "surrounds it with pride, junk, and stupid delusion while he lets his spirit become stunted." Now, in the book, The Might of the Thoughts, in the preface, in the introduction, it says that we are a human race which is ill in our consciousness. And part of that illness is religion. Now, there is a universal consciousness. There is a superintelligence which created our universe, which maintains our universe. But it's not a personified notion of God. Creation is an immense neutral Wesenheit being. The Meyer information talks about Wesenheiten. In this case, human beings are Wesen because we have personalities. Even your dog or your cat is a Wesen in that sense. But this universal consciousness is a pure spiritual energy. And it's a super intelligence, but not a personified person. Not like a human being. Not a superhuman form. It's not a divinity. It really even has no personality, even though it radiates love. You see, for example, the sun radiates light, but it has no personality. The universal consciousness is a superintelligence that's all about evolution. See, that's what the whole purpose of our life is the consciousness evolution, the evolution of our consciousness. This universal consciousness creates human spirit forms, which have many, many physical material lives as human beings, so that the consciousness of the spirit form evolves. You can almost think of the spirit form as a piece of this universal consciousness, as a tiny part piece of the universal consciousness. But this superintelligence was at one time, and our whole universe was the size of a flea at about 46 trillion years ago. And then 46 trillion years ago, we had what our scientists call the Big Bang, which started one evolutionary cycle of this creation. And the evolutionary cycle of the creation is about 311 trillion years. And right now we're in the expansion phase of the universal consciousness, but it will also contract, and then it will lie dormant for a certain amount of time, and then the Big Bang will start again, and we'll have this cycle that will occur many, many, many times, like 10 to the 24th, some incredible number of times, this cycle continues. But what has happened in ancient times is our forefathers, mostly because of tampering with certain higher evolved extraterrestrial beings, confused the idea of the universal consciousness and God. Now, the gods of the past, the gods of the earth, were human, and they came from the depths of space. And there was one particular group of these gods who was centered in Egypt. And Egypt was the beginning of monotheism on the earth. In fact, Akhenaten, one of the pharaohs, called himself, well, he was originally, his name was Amenhotep IV, but he changed his name to Akhenaten in honor of the worship of the sun god Ra. In the depictions in the Egyptian murals, you'll see these circular round orange icons over certain figures in the Egyptian murals. But thousands of years later in Christianity, you'll see the halos forming over the head of the depiction of the saints in the pictures of the various Christian artifacts and arts. So you see the same icon used in ancient past in Egypt as came about in Christianity. A very, very interesting thing. And in Asket's explanations in part one, Asket taught Billy about the delusions generated by these Giza intelligences. And she said, for thousands of years, they deceived the earth human with religious miracles and visions of every kind in order to maintain and to yet further increase the religious delusion. Out of these grounds, they have also created a mighty station under the Pyramid of Giza in order to guide from there the religious delusion of events on the earth. And the first person in that lineage of these very cruel tyrants was a man named Eris the 11th, who was the 11th descendant from Eris the Barbarian, who conquered the area of Hyperborea during the time of Atlantis and Lemuria, and his son Eris the 2nd conquered India and Pakistan. Eventually, those two kind of got the war between Atlantis and Lemuria started, which was the last great catastrophe that wiped out all civilization here on the earth and ended at about 11.5 thousand years ago when a great asteroid was directed by the Lemurians and smashed into the earth and caused a change in how the earth sits on its axis. That's how powerful that weapon was. So we're once again standing on the precipice of these kind of calamities. Now, we're in something called the third millennium now. And in the third millennium, our leaders are said to be megalomaniacal. And have you noticed how all our freedoms are being eroded intentionally? Well, the Meyer information explains there's a dark order. There's a very dark order that's come out of our ruling class, which is working to gain control of everything that's important. particularly they focused in money. And now people, because of that, are helpless and homeless, and they walk around kind of with a very strange look on their face, like they don't know what to do next. And part of this is because of the functioning of this dark order. Now, I've been ranting here for quite some time, and I do have a couple callers that I think may want to chat a little bit. Let me first bring Eve on, if I can. Eve, are you there, and how are you?
I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yes, and you sound pretty good. No echoes.
Oh, good. I've got volumes down, and I'm doing very well. I'm just
good.
Listening to your little teaching show. You always do so well in it.
Thank you very much. Hang on just a second. Sorry, I'm getting a bit of a distracting call here. Let me see if this is Delta. Delta, are you on the air?
Yes, Mark, how are you?
How are you? Do you have a second?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, man. I wanted you to get the opportunity to talk a little bit about your website that you're putting up. I know you put a lot of work into it, and it's kind of related to the Meyer material to a certain degree. Is that correct?
Yeah, I mean, you know, my intention is more to call and to talk about the website at all, but, you know, since you brought it up, when I, you know, started my investigation into the Meyer material, and that's, you know, ongoing, I'm very much convinced that the whole thing is, you know, it's the real thing. I had heard about the peace meditation, and, you know, I've got two websites that I'm working on, and both of them are inspired by, you know, what I've been reading in the Meyer material. But when I heard about the peace meditation, I was, according to the Meyer information, the Pleiaren have advised that people take part in this peace meditation. And basically, it's a collective of people who do a focused peace intention to basically help turn things around for the better on Earth. So I started a website called Quantum Leap, and basically, if you've ever heard of YouCaring or Kickstarter or any of those websites, it's similar in the sense that it's a crowdsourcing website. It's not to collect funds, but basically it's to connect people to do focused peace meditations. So that's the kind of idea behind it. And I started doing this research. I wanted to know more about, you know, does this actually work? You know, can we actually influence change? And this ties into what you were talking about earlier, your thoughts. You were talking about parents, if they were alcoholics and they're, you know, that they can actually imprint that onto their kids.
Yes.
And this is the whole idea. How does that work? It's not necessarily just by talking, but your whole thoughts, your feelings, they penetrate everything around you and have an effect on you. It's not just a local thing. It's actually, you know, quantum physics now is this is where it gets into quantum physics, is confirming that, you know, this, when you think, your feelings travel to, you know, amazing distances, you know, and can have, you can only imagine if you have a sum of people collectively focusing on an intention, the influence that can have. So that's my little rant, but,
Let me throw something out that'll put an exclamation point on what you're saying here, because this also falls right in line with what I have been studying, something called mental fluidal powers. And these are vibrations. Now, these vibrations, they come out from our personality, they come out from our consciousness, they come out from our body, and they're literally stored in our cells. These mental fluidal powers are vibrations, and they store our character, our mentality, our psyche, all of these energies, they also actually settle in things around your home. They'll settle in walls, they'll settle in furniture. If you spend much time outside, they'll even settle in the trees, they'll settle in jewelry, they'll settle in clothes. So your thoughts are always influencing your environment. So don't fall under the trap that, you know, you can't change things. You can make a positive difference just by your own thoughts, your own feelings, and you'll help your health. You can positively affect everything around you. In fact, I have a clip here by Bruce Lipton. And are you you're a big Bruce Lipton fan, aren't you, Delta?
Bruce Lipton? I've been following his stuff, yeah.
Well, let me play this clip because he talks about what he calls the biology of belief. We wouldn't really use the term belief in the Meyer material, but I think the idea is very, very similar. So let's play this.
Are found in the cell, in the individual cell, in a structure called the nucleus. So almost all people have seen a cell with a nucleus in it. And virtually all the genes are in the nucleus. As it says right here in this paper, which is in a recent issue of Science, this is one of the most prestigious journals in the world today, it says here in the first sentence on this article, which was dealing with the whole issue dedicated to the role of the nucleus, first sentence, the nucleus is the command center of the cell. This is conventional belief, that the nucleus is the command center because in the nucleus are the genes, and the genes control you, so the nucleus represents that source of control for the cell. Well, the command center of the cell would be tantamount to the brain. As I used to teach in medical school to the medical students, the cells, and this is an image of a cell, just a cartoon image of a cell, the cells make us up. We have approximately 50 to 75 trillion cells that make our body. Interesting point I used to teach them is this. There is no new function in your entire human body that's not already present in every cell. Every cell has a respiratory system, a digestive system, an excretory system, an endocrine system, an integumentary system, a nervous system, a reproductive system, an immune system. Basically, what I'm trying to tell you is this, that the cell and the human are structural, functional counterparts of each other. Whatever is in the cell is in the human. Whatever is in the human is in the cell. So when I talk about the brain of the cell, the brain of the human, as that element that controls the command center of the human body, when I come over here and just read what we just read off the Science journal that said the nucleus is the command center of the cell, this is because all the DNA is in here, then we get the assumption that the nucleus is the brain of the cell, which is what you anticipate if it's the command center. Well, that's an interesting concept for this reason. I'll ask you a simple question, and the question is this. If I take the brain out of any living organism, what is the immediate and necessary consequence of that action? Death. Absolutely. It's going to die. So what happens if I go to the cell and take the nucleus out of the cell? Well, if the nucleus is the brain of the cell, by definition, the cell is going to die. Here's the reality. I remove the brain from any organism and the organism dies. But if I go to the nucleus and remove the nucleus from the cell is totally unaffected by it. A cell can live for two or more months with no genes in it at all. And it's not just sitting there. It's doing everything it was doing before we took the nucleus out. It's moving around. It's communicating with other cells. It's eating. It's growing. It's able to eliminate waste and build up.
So the genes are important, but they're not necessarily the real thing that's in control here. We always think that the genes are influencing everything, but in fact, it's the thoughts that are actually our consciousness that's influencing everything. Let me play just a little bit of this next clip, and then we'll talk about this a little more.
I take all the genes out of the cell, and I alter the behavior in no way. Meaning this, by definition, the nucleus cannot be the controlling center of the cell because the cell still has control with no nucleus. Well, wait, I took all the genes out and the cell still has behavior. The bottom line is that the genes do not control biology. This is a mistake. This is an assumption. It was made years and years ago. It was never proven scientifically, but it just seemed so correct that we bought the story. And in fact, the cosmic joke just hit us not very long ago with the outcome of the Human Genome Project. Why was it a joke? And I'll tell you this. If the mechanism worked according to the way it's written in the textbooks, that the genes control biology, then there's the requirement that there has to be at least 120,000 genes to make a human. When the Human Genome Project's results were turned in, it turned out that there were only less than 35,000 genes. Over 90,000 genes are not present, which means this. It's not that the genes are absent. Our belief system was wrong. The genes do not control biology like we thought. So the Human Genome Project really pulls the rug out because they thought they were going to get the blueprint of how to make a human with all of these genes. And it turns out there are not that many genes. Two-thirds of the genes are missing, meaning we have to now understand a new way of looking at biology. Interestingly enough, though, the new understanding actually started to come out in the last 10 years. So everything I'm going to talk to you about tonight is science within the last 10 years. And the interesting part about it is this. It takes at least 10 or 15 years for science to take a fact from its first inception to get it out into the public so that the people can understand it. So anything in a textbook, for example, is at least 10 or 15 years old. So what you're going to hear tonight...
Okay, that was Dr. Bruce Lipton talking about how our thoughts affect our physical bodies, and he's right now seeing that basically it's not all just the genes and the DNA, and we'll get to that to a second. I'm going to take a halfway point break here. I've got a call from 661. Hello, 661? Are you just listening? 661? Okay. 661, I think, is just listening. I'll see if they want to speak later. Hang on, folks. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes. This is Ohio Exopolitics. We're going to take a short break. Let's do a little music. Welcome all of you back to Ohio Exopolitics. I'm your host, Mark Snyder. And just a quick reminder, by the way, I'll be on freedomslips.com tonight, Studio B, and I'll be talking to Edward T. Martin about Jesus in India, his excellent book, and we're going to take that back and relate that to the Meyer information, because the Meyer information talks about this individual called Emmanuel. Now today, we call this person Jesus. And I wanted to take a little side tangent. Now we've been talking about religion. We've been talking about the importance of our thoughts and how our thoughts affect our health and how lower thoughts form lower feelings. Lower feelings form lower habits. Lower habits lead to lower circumstances. But by the same token, healthy, constructive thoughts lead to positive circumstances and to better health. And the Meyer information says here in The Might of Truth and The Might of Thoughts, in page 142, at least in my version, accordingly, beautiful, good, and positive thoughts of every kind form habits and circumstances as well as convictions and experiences worth living of grace and kindness, cheerful, moderateness, and self-control. So what happens is these positive thoughts, these neutral positive thoughts, remember the universal consciousness is a neutral positive entity. When our thoughts align with the thoughts of the universal consciousness, it performs, creates kind of a protective energy around our whole body, which strengthens our immune system. And just the opposite occurs when you have lower thoughts. So you need to think of your consciousness like a garden and reach in and start to pull out some of these wildly growing weeds. We all have wildly growing weeds in our consciousness that pop up from time to time. You know, one of the things I've learned to start saying, just to kind of counteract any negative thoughts that might have popped in, particularly anxiety, don't ever let anxiety come in. Because when anxiety gets a foothold, it will destroy your whole world of thoughts. And in fact, anxiety and fear kill many, many people every year. So when you start to feel just a little bit of anxiety, tell yourself all is well. Repeat it, all is well, all is well. And then quote this: I live in love, I live in peace, I live in harmony. And pretty soon those negative thoughts will go away. They'll dissolve. And then as you start to think healthy thoughts, loving thoughts, remember the primary creational natural law, numero uno, above all creational natural law, is the law of love. Not affective love, not the love that deals with romance, but another kind of love, effective love, that deals with spiritual love. It's effective love is the certainty that we live with a connection with all flora and fauna and people. In fact, this universal consciousness is said to radiate love. The incredible splendor of nature is the visible expression of the love of creation. And even though creation is kind of a neutral, positive superintelligence, which really doesn't have a personality in the sense that we humans do or that some of the animals do, it radiates love. And the splendor, the magnificence of nature is the visible expression of this love. And that's why in ancient times, when the kings of wisdom, when the Ishwishes would teach their students, they would always take them out into nature. So they would learn to observe, because through observation of nature, you will eventually come to what's called Empfinden in the German, which is a fine, sensitive feeling that starts to sense this radiating love of creation. You see, creation radiates love so that every point, at every place, and in every moment, you can sense the radiating love of creation. And every tiny animal, every tiny plant fulfills its purpose in love, because love is the highest principle in creation. And by that principle, every thing operates. And Billy wrote it down beautifully in this book called The Goblet of Truth, when he said that rivers, lakes, streams, plants, animals, bushes, trees, everything that crawls and flies on the earth is a life form with a spirit form. And these spirit forms live many, many lifetimes, and they are aware of each other, and they're connected to each other by these psychic swinging waves. And that's what Bruce Lipton is starting to recognize here, is that out from our thoughts come psychic swinging waves. And the animals, the wizen, the lesser evolved animals, to a degree, also have these psychic swinging waves that connect all things. You see, that's what creation really is. It's understanding this connectedness. So always take the time to go out into the forest and listen. Not only watch, but listen to the cicadas, the birds, all of the animals. And if you get up early, watch the sunrise and listen to creation as it wakes up, and start to understand this radiating love that's not a romantic love, that has nothing to do with religion. It's the nature of the universe. And I think I have a clip here, which is from this writing that Billy wrote. It's Mechanical Voice. I won't play it too long. People don't like mechanical voices. And it talks about creation and the love of creation.
Love Teaching Letter No. 27. Another great saying that comes from Love Teaching Letter No. 27, page 296. The love of creation is everywhere, because without it nothing at all would be able to exist. The individual should therefore be aware that he exists only through the love of creation, and that he carries this love also within himself. For more information, read Love Teaching Letter No. 27, page 296. For more information, read Fig Post about Love Teaching Letter No. 27. Each smallest plant, each ever so tiny animal was created and loved by creation. Each creation existing according to the same law of love. All life is in the absolute perfection that which it should be through the love of creation, and except for humans, every life form lives exactly by this creation's plan. Only.
So we as a society have gone down a wrong path of evolution. And because we've gone down this wrong path of evolution, the Meyer information talks about the society as being an aberration, which is almost like a deformity. And that's how serious things are on the earth. We are said that we have a consciousness that's ill. We are society that's ill in its consciousness. And it's manifested in so many different ways that it's astonishing. And almost everything that we think we know is a partial truth and, in fact, distorted. I have a clip here on the letter J, and this has been one of the revelations that I've stumbled across. Hopefully this won't be too loud. And it talks about, well, I'll just let it play and then we can discuss it a little bit.
J is the youngest letter of the alphabet. The letter J is roughly 500 years old and was not part of the ancient Greek, Hebrew, or Latin alphabets. By way of contrast, the ampersand, a combination of the letters E and T, is 2,000 years old. The oldest letter is O, which has been with us for 3,000 years. J descended figuratively and literally from the letter I and was used to give a consonant sound to the letter I. Consider how the letter A sounds differently depending on the word it is used in. Baby or bath, for instance. At one time, I might have been used to sound both like I or like J. Important political and religious figures whose names started with the letter I lived before the invention of the letter J, and today their names are commonly spelled with a J rather than with an I. Julius Caesar was born in approximately 100 BC, and Jesus Christ was born in approximately 5 BC. Some scholars believe that names that began with I were pronounced as if they began with Y, and pronunciations evolved over time. To some people, there are religious implications in the spelling of religious names. Of course, there are no recordings from these time periods, and scholars must rely on ancient texts for guidance. Any books written before 1600 had no J's as we know them. In 1455, Johannes Gutenberg invented movable type, which some consider humankind's greatest invention. Gutenberg's first name likely started with I because he was born before J's were used. Copies of the Gutenberg Bible still exist, and in it Job, for instance, was spelled I-O-B. Similarly, the 1611 edition of the King James Bible had no J's, but 1769 editions of the King James Bible had J's. Some credit Italian playwright and scholar Gian Giorgio Cicino, who was born in 1478, for the official split of I from J. Cicino wrote that the consonant J should be a distinct letter from the vowel I. Similarly, Cicino wrote that the vowel U should be separate from the consonant V. Both ideas grew in popularity, and thus we have J's and U's.
Anyway, the implications of that are pretty huge, and I want to bring a couple of my folks back on the air here. 661, did you want to say anything? Were you just listening? Yeah, I think they're just listening. I'll put you back on mute. And Eve, if we don't get any weirdness, maybe we can bring you back on the air. Are you there? Hello, Eve? Oh, well, I'm not hearing anything from Eve either. Maybe there's some strangeness going on at Blog Talk. Wouldn't be the first time. In any case, the letter J. Why did I bring this up? Well, just to go to show you how little that we know actually making sense. That means in the first version of the King James Bible in 1600, there wasn't an Elijah. There was an Eliah. No J sound yet in history. By the same token, remember what it said there on the clip? Job was originally depicted as I-O-B. The letter J originated as a swash letter, a long I, and the swash letter got fancy and eventually became the letter J by this Gian Giorgio Trissino in about 1500s, and this was actually, I think he was working on Middle High German at the time, and then eventually J was found in French and eventually got moved into English around the 1600s. Why is this significant? That means before 1600, the person that we call Jesus wasn't called Jesus. There was no J sound. Now, some people say he was called Yeshua, some people in Hebrew, and some people say Iesus in the Greek. The Meyer information says his name was Emmanuel. So anyway, I'll let you make your own decisions on all of that. But that is the amazing part of our history, how it's been distorted. I'll bring Eve back on if she can chat a bit. Eve, how are you?
Am I on?
You're on. You're breaking up a little bit, but let's see how it goes.
Okay. Sorry about that.
That's okay. Now, you just got back from a trip to Arizona, where a group of the Meyer people meet out there in Munns Park.
Mm-hmm.
And do some interesting studies. Was that enjoyable again this year?
It was. There's a lot more people there than when we were here last year.
Did you have 15, you said?
No, actually, I think it was around 12 of us, 12 or 13 of us, which was, you know, more than last year.
Yeah. That's good. So maybe this information is gathering a bit of a foothold.
Well, I sure hope so. I sort of despair sometimes about it. I guess I need to change my thinking on that.
Yeah, it's real easy to do that. I mean, go ahead and finish your thought there.
Oh, you know, it's just, I think when Michael Horn talks a lot about the media and entertaining, you know, everybody is so over-entertained.
Yeah.
And these stories just sort of become blips on the screen. I mean, because there's so much. And the important stories just get ditched after a while. You know, no one's talking about the IS movements or threats that are going on right now. I don't know.
I do have a clip here.
I think you have to just sort of kind of hold out in your little corner of the world and study. And then, you know, if you have the energy, go out into the world and try and bring the information forward to others like you're doing.
Well, thank you, Eve. I think, you know, we can make a difference. I'll mute you just for a second there. You're breaking up a tad. And we can make a difference because our thoughts are very contagious. And our thoughts and behaviors are very contagious. And you being there, emanating healthy, naturally occurring, equalized, neutral, positive thoughts, and focusing on this material is going to make a difference. Now, yes, it's a very interesting set of circumstances that's going on now with ISIS particularly, and also with the global elite, this dark order that I've talked about that's coming out of our ruling class that's also trying to gain control over the world right now. I'm going to play a little bit of a clip here that talks about the Iraqi caliphate. And how what they're trying to do with the delusional, remember, and I started out talking about schizophrenia and delusion and how certain religions, particularly very, very extreme religions, lead to this kind of thinking. Remember, lower thought leads to lower feelings, which lead to lower habits, which lead to lower circumstances. And these religions, like this real extreme Muslim form of religion, produces a very potent and negative, unhealthy kind of thinking. So the first part of this battle is always in your thoughts. So as you and I focus on creation, focus on not live and let live, but in the Meyer information, I think it's in the book, The Might of Thoughts, it talks about live and help live. So you have an obligation to help your fellow man live, to give this information, this higher, healthier thinking to your neighbor, to your friends, to your loved ones. Also help the animals in your own way that you can, and you have to decide for yourself what is right for you. Help the plants, the flora and the fauna. You see, we're all connected in this thing called the creation. And these extreme forms of thinking are very dangerous. I want to play just a short part of this clip on ISIS and the Iraqi caliphate.
In the name of Allah, and supported by the Quran, chant the Islamic State of Iraq and Syria. In a one-hour documentary, ISIS explained their world. It is a world of horror, and one that they display brazenly. The professional video starts in Fallujah, only 50 kilometers away from the gates of Baghdad. Here, where 10 years ago America fought a bloody battle, masked men with black flags now dominate the streets. When these fighters attack, they don't take prisoners. This assault on an Iraqi military base is documented by their cameras, showing their atrocities in detail. The ISIS video grants anonymity to the offenders, but exhibits victims without mercy. The ISIS offensive troubles this Iraqi family. They have lived in quiet Switzerland since 1996. Today, close relatives back in Iraq are in great danger.
Eine Verwandte von mir hat mir gesagt, also ich habe ihn gefragt, ob er immer noch lebt. Er hat gesagt, warten.
This is a very interesting clip. I will go back to it here shortly. But I wanted to bring in some Meyer information talking about what this Islamic State is. It's an Islamic extremist rebel group controlling territory in Iraq and Syria right now. And Billy talks about this in Contact 593. And Christians are currently being converted to Islam and converted to ISIS. And they are told, convert or die. We, in a sense, created ISIS when we disbanded the Iraqi army. And many of the people in the army of Iraq are converted into ISIS. These people, they have no jobs. Their whole country's been destroyed when we were in there with our military. It's no wonder they're converting to ISIS. And the leader of ISIS right now is Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi. And he is kind of known as the caliphate or the leader. And the Meyer information, for whatever reason, calls him the Pied Piper, because many people will follow him in the future. In Contact Report 593, it says, also from Arabic and African countries, as well as from the U.S., Canada, Asia, South America, fanaticized Islamists are called in this wise in order to participate with ISIS, which now calls itself IS, or the Islamic State. And their goal is to bring in this caliphate, this Iraqi state, or excuse me, this Islamic state. Let's pick back up in our clip here.
It's a recurrent ritual. The holy warriors destroy their passports. It's their way to enter a new world. The short-term goal of ISIS is a caliphate, reaching from Fallujah almost to Aleppo, the stronghold of Syrian rebels. But their presence in Aleppo has noticeably diminished. Some weeks ago, our camera recorded a few traces of ISIS, black flags here and there. But in recent months, the Free Syrian Army has forced many of the black-masked fighters out of town. Anwar Mohammed has returned from exile in Turkey. This rebel media activist escaped from an ISIS prison 6 months ago. He wants to show us the place where he had been tortured. It is a former children's hospital. ISIS also offered him money to join them, but Anwar refused.
They said, we give you money, $1,000 per month. And they offered me to work with them too.
The scenery displayed in this ISIS document about Syria is totally different. In the town of Al-Bab, northeast of Aleppo, you'll find clean shops, according to their manifesto. Peace everywhere, no guards required. Their photographs show a lot of things, including gasoline, but rarely people. In Aleppo, rebels of the Free Syrian Army are frustrated. Rashwan al-Shahib tells us that he was also tortured by ISIS. Previously, he believed that the jihadists had joined them to support the insurgents against President Assad. Today, he finds himself in a two-front war.
والله إنهم ظلام وهن يقولوا عنا كفار مرتدين بل هن الكفار وهن المرتدين أنا مجاهد في سبيل الله اعتقلوني باسم إنه جيش حر وعب
Okay, that's ISIS. What does the Meyer information have to say about it? In contact 251, it says 1995 will also be a year when an unknown powerful male individual begins to come into prominence, who spellbinds the world and gathers followers around him in much the same rat-catching manner as the Pied Piper of Hamelin. For this reason, in one prophecy, he is called the Rat Catcher. These events coincide with many innovations and discoveries in technology and science. So this started way back in 1995. Remember, the Islamic prophet Muhammad, he had sayings and actions recorded in something called hadiths. And these hadiths deal with personal matters like hygiene, diet, prayer, everyday etiquette, and fasting. And what ISIS wants to do is establish Sharia law. And Sharia law is attempting to be established in the United States. So anyway, I hope you've enjoyed the show this afternoon. I'll be on freedomslips.com tonight, and we'll be talking about Jesus in India. And I'll have Edward T. Martin on the air then. I think my studio just blipped out on me. Hopefully my studio will come back, folks, and then I can go ahead and I think I better log out. I appreciate everyone listening. I appreciate the folks that will listen to the archive. You've been listening to Ohio Exopolitics. I'm your host, Mark Snyder. Have a great day.